Who has the first question? Calls.
And we are live for the IG community as well.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so Expo West, you come here every year. When someone says, why? Why would you come to a conference like this? You're not in the food and beverage space. There's so much opportunity in spaces that maybe isn't necessarily your industry. And so what brings you back to things like this every year?
Yeah, there's a reason why you see Gary V and me here. And it's because, you know, I use this. And the reason is that I work with entrepreneurs, and this is an entrepreneurial show. CPG is just the same as technology. I've been to Comdex CES since it started. The Super Bowl, you know, where you look at the events that I go to, there's businesses there. And my business is to help people make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. And if you've never been to Expo West, I don't think there's a better show where people make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. And so, you know, I'm a backdrop person. You know, ironically, unintentionally, you know, the movie Jerry Maguire was made about Lee Steinberg and the firm I ran. And people invariably, even today, oh my God, you're the real Jerry Maguire. Oh, Jerry Maguire is my favorite sports film. Well, it's not a sports film, is it? It's a love story with a sports background. Expo West is a background to business and is a backdrop to business. And so if you want to do business, I certainly appreciate not seeing just CPG companies. I saw, you know, a wash cleaning clothes thing. I saw all types of different companies that are relative to CPG companies. I like to see those companies as well. But I think you're making a big mistake if you think you're a certain type of person in a certain type of industry. Industries are backdrops to whatever you want to do. If you're an artist, you could be an artist for CPG companies. If you're a musician, you can be a musician for ZP. Sports agent, same thing. Great questions. Next question.
Mace? So you've written a whole bunch of books now. What is the next project that you're working on that you want to reveal to everybody?
Sure. So my next book is 5 Daily Practices. And I've been working on it for a while. Could write it in my sleep. I think it's the answer to about 50% of the questions in one way or the other is based off of those 5 daily practices of knowing what you want, who you can help, who can help you, how to do what you want to do, prioritizing for people is difficult, knowing what's important, what's urgent, understanding that it's the antidote to people feeling overwhelmed, procrastinating. And then critically, half the book will be about applying our why, which is the major shift in the paradigm that I've learned is that so many people, especially entrepreneurs, business people, they're searching for their purpose. They're searching for their why instead of applying it. And I know there's a variety of wisdom in applying your why, but there's also faith as a variable. And it can be your own faith in whatever it is that's bigger than you and protects you or promotes you, loves you, perfects you. But those 5 daily practices, you know, that's the next gem as far as books go. I have a pitch out there for a TV show called Second Chance. And so you'll see in the economy, there's going to be a ton of companies that raise $2 to $5 million. They're just getting to the point now because we went through such a strong period of time where people got funding. I saw this in Korea in 1999 to 2002. These really good companies have spent all this money and they run out of money. And the economy moves a little bit and there's no more money out there. And so what a better time to have a TV show called Second Chance, where I pick and choose the best entrepreneurs, well-funded businesses that are out of money, and do a TV show about their second chance and get a bargain on the investment side, not only because it's a TV show, but because we'll make the investment in the companies. So we're getting, you know, for pennies on the dollars, a really good CEO. Because any entrepreneur, they get to a point where they raise $2 to $5 million, they made it so far, and they're so close, they're willing to do anything to make it work. And it's so emotional. It's great TV. So that's my next project on TV. All right, Adam.
First of all,
appreciate your platform. Obviously, to the, you know, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get there and be the voice for everybody. If you can talk a little bit about the rejections and the no's that you had.
Have. Yep. You need to put that in the present tense. Have.
Have. Because it's funny that you said that. You know, if you think about it, feel bummed, like a chance. You know, for the ones that are struggling with the no's and the rejection.
Yeah, great question. So, first of all, everybody every day deals with some sort of no or rejection. And so I talk a lot about giving meaning to the no's and the rejections. See, God gave us a power to give meaning to what we see. I'm lucky because I have a very publicized, very big failure, rejection, right? Losing over $100 million. And so it becomes identifiable with people that, oh, fuck, he lost that much? I've only lost 100 grand. Oh, this. And so what makes it interesting, though, is the meaning that I've given it for almost 20 years. And it didn't happen overnight, right? When I keep reminding people, when that happened, I lost everything. If you would have said to me, oh, you're so lucky, you're being promoted and protected, loved and perfected by you losing everything, I would have kicked you in the balls, right? I'd be like, get the fuck away from me. This sucks. I lost my mom's house. But through the meaning that takes time, I've been able to change that to, it saved my life, it saved my marriage, it put me on the right trajectory to success. But things happen very slowly. It's life's work.
Yeah.
Remember, your work is life's work. It's not today's work. It's not this week. It's not this month. So if you're not working in the context in the day, according to the circumstances, and when I say according to the circumstances, I've simplified it for people. There are definitely circumstances. There's uncertainty every day where these mistakes happen, the failures, the setbacks, the mistakes, the no's. That happens every day. You can hedge it by having non-negotiable behavior, right? So if you work within the context of minimum amount of time for sleep, for our health, for our family, for our finance, for your faith, for the study of time, so you use it wisely, and the study of the meaning of what you're doing, and you make that half your day, which the majority of it's sleep, now you can deal with the circumstances within what? Your life's work. So I'm asking myself, and once again, the five daily practices, what is it I want today after my non-negotiables? What is it I want today according to the circumstances of the day? And how can I align the lessons of the past, the meaning of the past, the setbacks, failures, and mistakes of the past to get me to where I want to be or better? It has nothing to do with the ego-based response to I got to know. First of all, yes or no, nobody likes feedback in the present. Nobody likes feedback in the present. So unfortunately, even feedback that's not a no, nobody likes it immediately. It takes time to give meaning to it so that you figure out how it's purposeful, how it helps you, why you would like it. And so you can imagine no is feedback and it's in the present. So you'll never like it. And yet a lot of times you'll understand the revelation or the resolution to the no is that, gosh, I'm so glad I didn't do that. But it takes time because it's your life's work. It's not your daily work. Got it.
It's been 3 years since I stopped working for you.
With me.
With you, stopped working with you.
So for Justin, no.
I'm curious. You always talked about being okay with changing your mind. So what core values of your life have you changed? What have you changed over the last 3 years?
Oh, it's a great question. What values have I changed over the last 3 years? So one is faith. You know, I've changed my perspective that I'm in control to I'm in control of my behaviors, not my outcome. Where I used to think that my behaviors created my outcomes in the respect that I could control the outcomes because I would do, say, think, feel, and believe that. Instead, I now each day do think, feel and believe something in a direction, but the outcomes are irrelevant to me because I have so much faith now. I have so much faith now that I don't understand most of the time. Like Adam, the evidence is contrary to where I want to be. And so before I would say, oh, I must be doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing the wrong things because I'm running out of money today. I'm failing today. I got a no today. or whatever it is. So that's the first thing that's changed over the last 3 years, is that I'm completely a behavioralist, in alignment with where I want to be, and aligning the meaning of the past with it as well. The outcomes are irrelevant. They're going to happen. They're going to happen as long as I don't quit. They're going to happen. Sometimes do I have to diminish the amount of time, attention, and intention I spend on it? Sure. Because I have to, what, harmonize my life with personal, experiential giving and receiving things in my life. And so I may take a step back, but never quit, to spend less time in what we're doing. So that would be the biggest shift. And then the other side in personal that's really changed since you work with me is, like, instead of looking for what I don't want in people, I really look for what I do want in them. It's easy, especially at work or when you have employees, to look at what you don't want in them instead of what you do. And then most importantly, in your marriage or your intimate relationships, like my marriage changed 100% when I only look for what I want in my wife, right? Not what I don't want. And so all the stuff that creates interference. So those would be the two, one personal and one professional difference.
Great.
Hi, Lori.
There's one note that I want to tell you. You always talked about that, like, if we ever moved on, we would always say that, like, if we don't move out, we're anybody else. And after being away for 3 years, like, yeah, confidently say that is 100% true.
There's like, no competition.
There's been times where I'm like across the country in like some random town in Ohio, and like everyone, or we're in Colorado Springs doing a project. It's a long day, but it's just, those are the fun days. Like, those are the ones that I enjoy the most. Like, I was here last night for 11 hours
setting up
for our booth, and yeah, I just love it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I, you know, I've done this a long time, and people, you know, like you said, to feel okay when someone leaves, right? Whether it's you or them, why they're leaving was very difficult for me. But once I really believed in the value side of it, like, I know anybody that works with me, they're going to outdo everybody no matter where they are. It's proven. People know my team internally that we have, and they know that's going on right now. And you know, the guys who I've mentored, you know, they're presidents of teams, right? They're presidents of companies. They're COO, not 100 million, but $1 billion. And they're in their 40s, right? And you're in your 30s now, almost. So, right? It's crazy. And even to see it in my own kids, in my oldest, you know, the maturation and the confidence that it gives me, that I only, you know, unlike when you were there, I don't run the business. Mikey does. I teach. So I teach outside and inside my business. I work on my business, not in it. And so I teach values, practices, execution, and incentives every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And I know, even though you may not, or some of these other kids, that it's not involuntary servitude. I want, the biggest compliment you give me is start your own business. That means I've done my job. You know, it's kind of like when Colleen, I love the one time Colleen and I were sitting backstage, and you know this guy. We're sitting backstage, and he starts railing off all my one-liners on stage. I'm up next. Be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self. Do good deeds. Like, you're either humble or you're about to be. And Colleen is getting so pissed. And it's like, and I looked at her, and that shift, I was like, you know what my mission is, to empower others. To be happy. If he can't figure out how to take that lesson without repeating exactly what I said, well, that's fine for me, but he's doing my job. And when you go out in bumfuck Ohio and kick ass, you're doing my life's work. My mission was to empower you, to empower others, because there's young kids that are going to learn from you as well, because they're going to watch you, not listen to you, right? There's one thing I know about everyone when you were young at Sports One Marketing, and before that, it's at least Steinberg. They may not have listened to me. They may not have agreed with me, but I was confident they were watching me. My work ethic, my efficiency, my focus, my intention, may not liked all of it, but they were watching it. And the reason I know is because that's what I did with my mom. I didn't agree with my mom so much of the time. I wouldn't take her advice, but I watched her my whole life. And I knew, and she knew, I was watching. So I had no doubt what to do. I could come up with my own advice, but I knew exactly what it took to survive and to succeed, to be kind, to be generous, all the things I watched my mom do. So you made me feel good. Thanks. All right. Who has the next question? Oh, thank you, Gary. Yeah, please.
Hey, David. You know, we started working together a couple months ago, and 2 weeks ago, you gave me a suggestion. Go out and call these conventions and say, do you have a last-minute speaker?
Cancellation, yeah.
Basically, it happened because of what you said. Just keep persistent. And now I'm going to be on the biggest tech conference in Japan beginning of April. So maybe share a little bit, you being the coach and having the suggestions and advice, what does somebody like me need to do to follow it and to be successful?
I love that. So my definition of happiness is to be able to enjoy the consistent everyday, persistent without quit, pursuit of your own potential. And most people aren't willing to do the work. I think one of the things that I teach that is easy to understand but hard to do, there's a big difference between people who go the extra mile and people that live in the empty mile. There's no competition in the empty mile. Right? Very few people, you go running at 4 a.m. in my neighborhood, there's no cars, there's nobody there. I love when I'm doing something and there's nobody at the car wash, nobody at the gas station, nobody in the gym, nobody outside, because I know I'm living the empty mile. Now, every once in a while, there's a dude out there at the gas station, at the car wash, at the gym, and he's going the extra mile, right? He's not working out a minimum of an hour like I do. He's doing 6 hours, right? He's going so hard. I'm like, all he's doing is going the extra mile every once in a while to justify why he's not where he wants to be. And so under the guise of happiness, where, and this is biochemically proven, anatomically proven, when you're in the pursuit of your potential, of your purpose, of your passion, of your profitability, you're happiest. When you're able and capable of helping somebody else, you are closest to God, you are happiest. So regardless of what you tell me in all of our coaching sessions as we go, I'm going to figure out a way to have you be consistent in person, on the phone, via email and social media, in alignment with where you want to be or better speaking by aligning the meaning of the past. And the people that actually do it, I love. I got a call the other morning too from somebody else, same thing. Oh my God, it worked. I know it worked. And then they'll give you way too much credit. I used to give Sharon Lecter, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I would give her all this credit for changing my perspective on not budgeting for things, but having a spending plan. That's different than budgeting. Budgeting's scarcity. But when you have a spending plan, you can create margins, profitability, because everybody can be profitable. It's just what you're willing to save compared to what you spent, right? The savings is profit. And one of the great pieces of advice my grandmother gave me was, I promise if you save 10% of everything you ever make, you'll be one of the wealthiest people financially that you'll when you're 65. So just cut every paycheck, everything you ever receive by 10% and put it away. Even if it's just in a savings bond, you'll be one of the wealth. And she's 100% right. I didn't listen. I had to learn the hard way. But nonetheless, we need to be consistent in what? Our non-negotiable behaviors, because that'll take care of 90% of it. I will tell you right now, if everybody here would commit to a minimum amount of time every day to your sleep and get better at it, to your health and get better at it, to your family and get better at it, to your finance and get better at it, to your faith and get better at it, to studying time for efficiency, effectiveness, and statistical success, and studying the meaning that you give to that time. If you spend 12 hours of your day, the majority of it sleeping, just doing that. No other advice do I give you. I'm not going to tell you to call all these events and say this. I'm not going to tell you to call this person and use this 9-box approach to closing or open-ended question guy or 3-no rule or 25-no rule or all AAA strategies. I don't have to tell you any of that. 90% of your success is going to come from these non-negotiable commitment to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential. You will be so productive, accessible, and gracious that money will follow you. You can fuck up all the other 12 hours of awake time, and I promise, but guess what? Most people can't even do the basics. Why do I teach gratitude so much? Because it's the fastest and easiest and least expensive way to change your life, right? I guarantee if you say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up, your life will change within 30 days. That's pretty easy. It's 0.1 seconds and it's free. But by tonight, and everybody shakes their head, oh yeah, gratitude's awesome, it works. By tonight, half of us won't say thank you. By tomorrow morning, half of us won't say thank you. And within 3 days, almost all of us won't say thank you. Even though every great thought leader, every great person you'll ever meet will tell you that gratitude's the most important thing. So you can imagine trying to teach people these non-negotiables. Right? I coach several of you here, and I push for that consistency. I push you to be your best. Right? And I don't let you lie to yourself, and it's uncomfortable, and all the things you have to do as a coach. See, if I was just a mentor, I would just give you directions to where I am. If I was just a teacher, I would teach you directions for me and other people that I know to get you to where you think you want to be. But the most difficult one is coaching, because I have to bring the best out of you, because most people won't do what they say they're going to do. Most people won't. And if you do what you say you're going to do, you will be in the empty mound. If you commit to this stuff, I promise you, it will happen very slowly, then all of a sudden, and everyone will think you're an overnight success. And there'll be plenty of screw-ups. Look, we still have them. You should have seen Mikey and my face at the YouTube theater when I put on a big event with Dane Cook and I, the collab, and we had Rob Riggle emceeing it for us, and Marshall Falk, and all this stuff. And if it could have gone wrong, it would have gone wrong, right? $500,000 loss. After a huge streak of wins, and it was like, wow. Minutes and moments in that, give it a new meaning, and we moved on, and it led to all these other great things as well. But did I know it in that minute? Not a chance. Evidence was not there again. And everyone's going to have it. I promise you, every single, Elon Musk has it, Gates has it, Cuban has it. They all have it still, and so do I. But are you just going to spend minutes and moments there, or are you going to spend the rest of the days, week, months, and years there? Yep.
I also feel that with the gentleman,
Gary.
Yeah. No, he was the guy of Penny.
Okay. Matt. Yeah, leave.
You just saw it in his eyes. Like when they leave, you're also instilling the true meaning of what discipline is. Because a lot of people, they think they're disciplined, but when they wake up in the morning and they're staying consistent, like you're saying, say thank you at night, some people will forget it because they're not disciplined at night. But how important is being authentic and balanced?
You got a lot of good words there that I like to change. So one, I don't believe in discipline. I believe people are disciplined, but they're not devotional. So I'll give you an example. One of the biggest things I see in coaching people is they're so busy working, they forget to make money. They're so busy working, they forget to spend time with their family. They're so busy working, they forget to be healthy. That doesn't make any fucking sense in the world, because the only reason you should work is so you can have more money, spend more time with your family, and be more healthy. That doesn't make any sense. See, that's discipline though. Those people I've seen, 12-hour days, 16-hour days, 7 days a week, discipline. But when you're devotional, you're disciplined in your divine direction. So you're spending a minimum amount of time on your sleep and your health and your family and your finance and your faith, study of time and study of relativity. You're devotional. You have a desire that you must be what you can be. You're not just going through the motions so that you can say that you are an extra miler and you work 16 hours a day. But what do you get done? Aligned with what? Your divine direction. So number one in the distinction, I love the word devotional, which incorporates discipline in a divine direction. If I get more people to be disciplined in their divine direction, the results would be greater. Two, you talked about another word, which was authenticity. So in branding, and I know a little bit about branding, there's two components of branding that you need to be aware of. One is, am I authentic with my brand? So the title of my book, Don't Do Business with Dicks, is actually not authentic to Dave Meltzer's brand. The authenticity comes from Unstoppable, Connected to Goodness, Compassionate Capitalism, Game Time Decision Making. So to use the word dick was not authentic, but it was at an essence, right? There's a frequency to it. Because of the subtitle, because of who I am, I could pull it off at this stage of my career because my frequency is well known as much as my authentic brand of, you know, being the gratitude guy or whatever people think I am. Or maybe they thought it was an autobiography when I wrote Don't Do Business with Dicks because 10% of the people hate you no matter what. So maybe they thought I was just writing about myself. It could be, but it could be at my essence. So that's fine. So I want you to think about what's authentic comparatively to what's my essence, my frequency. Because remember, it's how you make people feel, not what they will remember. And people feel your frequency. There's certain people that walk in a room and like, they call it charisma, whatever, they feel your frequency. You need to know your essence. I will walk out of a room if I'm off frequency and come back in after I shift my energy. That's how important it is. And then there's a third word.
Balance,
yeah. So I don't believe in balance. I don't think it's good for you. I think it's unrealistic to be balanced within 24 hours. Maybe in your lifetime you can pull off balance, but I would prefer people to want harmony in their life. Harmony has no dis-ease. Balance has a ton of dis-ease. Balance is so hard. The universe is it's harmonizing. It's not balance, right? Everything has a force and a counterforce, power versus force. If you read Dr. Hawkins, it's all about this idea of harmony. In fact, when people are sick, they're at disease. What are they doing? They're harmonizing their anatomy and their chemistry. They're just harmonizing it. And guess what leaves? The disease. You could have balance and you still will have disease. In fact, sometimes it causes much more disease because you're fitting in a man-made construct into an infinite world that it does not jibe or coordinate or collaborate with. So I prefer my day is in harmony, and that's why I use non-negotiable and negotiable behavior. I'm harmonizing my day, shortening the distance of resistance. One key component in harmonizing your day is a simple concept. So we have dis-ease. So if you believe I live in harmony, then you live in I am. So I am happy. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am worthy. And you're just trying to figure out what you're doing to interfere with it. Not the opposite, which is I'm going to be happy when, I'm going to be healthy when, I'm going to be worthy when, I'm going to be wealthy when, whatever it is. No, I am today. What am I doing to interfere with it? This is a harmonious way of looking at it. Because all I'm trying to do is identify anything that pulls me out of harmony, disease. And within every struggle, every time we're in disease, struggle, mistakes, setbacks, failures, pain, within every mistake, the solution's already there, isn't it? What's the difference? So this is a struggle of mine. The solution's already here. It's just a lapse of time until I figure it out. It's already there, though. It's always there. It's one, it's in harmony with the problem. The solution's in harmony with the problem. You just have to figure out the resolution, the resolution, and there's a lapse of time. So we should be focusing on what? Shortening the distance of time, shortening the distance of resistance that we're creating, shortening the dis-ease and trying to harmonize it, and it won't come through balance. Eric, nice hat, by the way.
Thank you.
And jacket.
Yes. So I have two questions. Well, the first is more like, I would love to know your response. So one of the things that Hormozy talks about is just volume, 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 and you just have to keep doing more volume, and eventually they'll get there if you just go and sing with volume. So I would love to know your thoughts on that. And the second is, could you talk about your understanding of risk tolerance, how someone gauges their risk tolerance?
Yeah. So let me start with the volume. Once again, don't get so busy volume without paying attention and giving intention. Alex Hormozi is one of the most intentional people. He's in his divine direction. He's very clear. If you read any of his books, I admire the simplicity and the clarity that he has. When you have that divine direction, then you can pick up all the volume. So if you think of volume as acceleration, which Hormozi does, if I know my divine direction, then I can pour volume in, or acceleration, aggregation, the outcomes will compound. But what happens if I don't take the time to get alignment? Right? We prepare with alignment, then take action, and then prepare for adjustments. Triple A strategy. So if all I'm concerned about is volume, but I don't take time to have divine direction, now I'm way over here. Volume actually hurts me. So what Alex is trying to say is, when you're in the divine direction, then pour in the volume. So, and then the second question was about
gauging risk tolerance, whether someone's underselling or pushing too much.
Yeah. So first of all, there's some basics that most people don't know in business. And the first thing in business is knowing your timing and risk tolerance. Most people don't take the time to know, and it's the biggest problem in investment too. They don't know their timing and risk tolerance. Why is timing and risk tolerance so important? Well, I use the example of a lottery ticket, because what happens is, if you buy a lottery ticket and you know your timing and risk tolerance, it's $2, I think. You know it's going to be Saturday at 8 o'clock. You know you have a 1 in a billion chance of making $500 million. So you know your timing. I'm okay with finding out on Saturday at 8 o'clock. You know your risk tolerance, 1 in a billion. You know the reward, $500 million. So invariably, when you lose the lottery, which you're almost guaranteed to do, almost, you are disappointed, but you're not resentful and guilty. So you try again, because you're just disappointed. And in actuality, there's some value in the entertainment of hoping for the $500 million and being disappointed you didn't win it. There's $2 of value for me in that excitement. That's timing and risk tolerance. So what happens is, people go into something without timing and risk tolerance, and they end up being resentful and guilty because they didn't know that they were only willing to do this. The same thing with pricing. You know, I spend a lot of time, people can't get it. They keep asking me, what's a good price for this? That's not my job. There's only two prices when you price something, and they're all on you, not on anybody else, not on the market. It's very simple. Number one, perceived value. Perceived value is based off of only one thing. How comfortable and confident are you in articulating the value? People, you know, speaking is a good example, because I coach a lot of speakers. Right, Gary? I'm $100,000. What's the difference in my today speaking when I was 25,000? Only one thing. I'm comfortable and confident in asking for 100 grand. Do I get 100 grand every time I speak? I'm not getting paid for this. So I need to know one other price, my bottom line. What is it worth for me to go to Japan and speak? And I tell this story all the time. It makes such a difference when you know your perceived value, your bottom line, timing, and risk tolerance. My best example ever was the Boy Scouts of America. I think I told you this, Care. Maybe not. Boy Scouts of America called and they said, hey, we'd like you to be the speaker of the 7,000 troop leaders coming into Syracuse for our annual meeting. How much are you? And I almost said, oh, Boy Scouts of America, 7,000 troop leaders, Syracuse, just get me there. I'll do it for free. That literally went through my mind like this. And then I said, no, I'm 100 grand. Oh, you're more expensive than Mike Tirico. So what does Mike Tirico have to do with this? Well, we're deciding between you and Mike Tirico. I said, oh, are you trying to sell tickets to the event? Because if you are, choose Mike Tirico. Because he's on ESPN. He'll sell more tickets to the troop leaders than David Meltzer, you know, the somehow subsequent synergistic Jerry Maguire BS that it is, right? That's Mike Tirico. And they said, no, all the troop leaders have to come. it sells out. I said, then why do you want me to speak? Well, we want an impactful speaker that can align with getting people to donate more money. So, well, how much money was donated last year? They said $1.2 million. I said, I'll tell you what, I will guarantee that I'll raise over $2 million if you pay me $100,000. If I don't raise over $2 million, don't pay me. Now, I only said that because I know my perceived value is $100,000. I'm confident in telling you I'm worth that. Doesn't mean you could afford it. Doesn't mean the audience is appropriate for it. But you asked me how much it is for me to speak. It's $100,000. And sometimes I turn down $100,000 because it's not worth it. Because my bottom line is I want to spend my anniversary with my wife in where I want to spend it, not in Brazil, and where she is pissed at me for a weekend and doesn't give a shit about $100,000 anymore. Right? This is my timing and risk tolerance now. Wasn't always that way. Right? I can't even tell you what my wife would let me do for $100,000 when I lost everything. I'm not sure I want to know. But she would have. Definitely let me speak for $100,000 in Brazil on our anniversary when I lost everything. Different timing and risk tolerance. But perceived value and bottom line. I already knew my bottom line was zero. So if I couldn't raise $2 million, I was going to get paid what my bottom line was anyway, and I still win. So know your timing and risk tolerance. Know your perceived value based only on your confidence and comfortability in articulating it, and know your bottom line. Bottom line is really important. Why? Because most businesses in America, 80% of the business they have would bankrupt them. What does that mean? Most businesses in America want to do business so bad, they take business that either breaks even or loses money. So if all you had was business that breaks even and loses money, you would go bankrupt. So now the other 20% is subsidizing 80% of the work. So what I tell people to do all the time is fire the business that you're losing money with and spend your time focusing on the people you're breaking even with to make them profitable, and then focus your attention on more profitable clients. Plus, make sure the 20% of the business that's losing money, or 10% that's losing money, that you recommend them to go to your biggest competitor. So now you got a double win. All right, everyone, if you don't mind me getting a quick group photo.
Do you want to do a quick sign off to the IG?
Oh, remember, be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self and do good deeds. See you tomorrow.